12th District. State Senator Brad Hawkins joins us on the line right now. Going to talk to us a lot about budgets once again this week, and then also about one of the bills that was recently passed out and is expected to be signed into law, actually, related to felony voter rights. And we'll get details on that from Brad and which way he swung and some more information about it coming up here shortly. And Brad, I appreciate the time. Thanks as always.
Hey, good morning, Chris. Always great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're kind of getting down the home stretch at the legislative sessions for 2021. So what's left to do, I suppose? Is there a short list? Do you feel like legislators are sort of on time right now, or maybe a little ahead of the game? Or is there kind of a backlog of things that will need to get done, at least in the Senate?
No, I feel like things are on schedule. The budget developers have started to unveil their budget proposals for this year. And as we talked about, I think last week, you know, the Senate proposes three budgets: operating, capital, and transportation. And we need to pass those out of the Senate. And then the House does the same thing. And once the two budgets are approved by their respective chambers, then the budget teams for each of those budgets try to iron out the differences. We did recently approve yesterday the Senate's transportation budget. That is almost a $12 billion budget. I serve on the Transportation Committee in the Senate, and so I did have a chance to review that budget in committee before it came to the full floor. In fact, I offered an amendment that was accepted in committee on the transportation budget to fund a combination fast charging and hydrogen fueling station in our area. So I'm really excited that that was included through the committee version and then ultimately what the Senate passed yesterday. But the transportation budget, for example, is really constrained this particular biennium because so much of the transportation budget revenues tie back to the revenues from the gas tax and other motor vehicle things. And as you can imagine with the pandemic, that's way down. There just haven't been a lot of people using the roads and driving, which is a good thing for the roads. But then when it comes to building this transportation budget, you know, it's a little more difficult. And then, so we've approved one of the three so far out of the Senate. And then the big one is the operating budget, and that proposal was just released a couple days ago in the Senate.
Been busy as far as the, again, trying to get all these budgets calibrated, Brad, and figure out, you know, what pieces are fit where, I suppose. How does the federal COVID money weigh into all of these budgets? I know that's a process that has kind of been left up to the states to figure out. So it sounds like obviously it's been filtered through a lot of the budgets since they're all being released. But that process, again, maybe specifically as it relates to transportation, it seems as though COVID and transportation would have much to actually offer to each other. But does the COVID money federally actually come into play or affect all the budgets?
Well, it definitely affects the operating budget. With the transportation budget, there is a U.S. Supreme Court ruling related to addressing fish blocking culverts, which is actually an infrastructure issue, but involved in the transportation budget. And we were able to utilize some of those federal dollars in the transportation budget proposal for those fish blocking culverts. And so we think that is one opportunity where we're able to help. And then depending on how much revenue some of the operating budgets have, some of the operating budget proposals actually propose to transfer funds into the transportation budget to support the transportation budget this year. Now, as far as the operating budget goes, you're right, the federal dollars are very significant in the multi-billions of dollars, and that has been a significant boost to the operating budget. And this operating budget is the one that funds the day-to-day operations of the state. So half of the budget is dedicated to K-12 education, but we also have higher education, health and human services, natural resources, state parks, a little bit of debt service in there too. But it was interesting when the operating budget proposal was recently released in the Senate, it's a huge step up. Currently, the two-year budget is approximately $54 billion, and this takes us, this proposal, to almost $60 billion. It's a $59.5 billion two-year budget proposal. I'm not supportive of it. It's kind of actually pretty frustrating, but in addition to all those federal dollars that are flowing through the system, the budget proposal in the Senate spends all the extra revenue that we recently have are projected to be receiving through the revenue forecast, but it also completely drains the $2 billion rainy day fund that we have in the state. And it assumes the passage of the capital gains tax as a new revenue source in addition to that. So when you add up all the new revenue the state is expected to get through its normal revenue forecast projection, fully utilizing the $2 billion budget stabilization account and adding in the capital gains tax, it takes the budget proposal up to almost $60 billion. And then we have all the federal dollars sort of on the side also flowing through the system for their specific purposes. And just to give you a sense, Chris, in 2011 and 13, just basically right as I was getting elected to the State House of Representatives almost 10 years ago, the proposed budget or the budget that was approved was $31.5 billion. And now we're talking about a $69.5 billion budget proposal. So in the past decade, the state budget has grown in a huge, huge way. And frankly, I am not sure that the state can sustain this if we have a true economic downturn, because we rely so much on sales tax and business taxes in our state. With this level of spending, if we do have the revenues take a decline, we're going to be in a world of hurt, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think anytime, regardless of your persuasion politically, Brad, you hear about spending what surplus the state has, it's always a little bit troubling for sure. So you talk about that rating day fund also being included in the budget. I think it gets everybody's hackles up just a little bit. Talking with 12th District State Senator Brad Hawkins here today on the Coho Morning Show. Brad, you alluded to it briefly, but we went into a pretty decent and in-depth conversation last week about that capital gains tax proposal, and it's come out in both versions of that budget that you just referred to from both the House and Senate. So it looks like it's probably actually going to be included and possibly pass, although there is some blockage that could occur, per other processes that we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. But where is that? How legitimate or how realistic do you feel like it is that may actually see a passage at this point and be a part of one of those budgets getting passed?
Well, I do believe it will be passed. I mean, they've taken huge efforts over several years to get this bill to the Senate floor. They finally did, and it passed by one vote. They do believe they have the support in the House to pass it, and the governor is eager to sign it into law. So I think that scenario lends itself well to the expectation that the bill will pass. I believe both budgets assume that it will. It's about $500 million of revenue in the out years, and primarily they want to use that revenue to fund an expansion in child care in our state. The first couple years of this $1 billion child care program was recently approved in the Senate is going to be funded by the one-time federal dollars, but then they're hoping the capital gains income tax will kick in. But, that remains to be seen. It could get approved, no doubt, but then it could be subject to a statewide voter referendum. So this November, we'll get an indication of whether voters would uphold that or not. And then if, for example, voters do uphold it, then I suspect it will be subject to almost immediate court challenges on its constitutionality at the state Supreme Court level. Many, many prognosticators believe that the state Supreme Court is eager to support something like this and to uphold it. But, that's all speculation. But there's a lot of sort of different scenarios that could play out with this capital gains tax. And with it such a significant component of the budget, when you build a budget around the assumption that you're going to get those revenues, what happens if voters don't uphold it? What happens if the Supreme Court strikes it down? Then you've built in programs in the budget that assume certain revenues that you're not able to gain. And then that creates a whole nother challenge later on in the budget as far as how to get those revenues later on or how to cut back those services and programs. So it could potentially be a very sticky wicket over the next couple few years to see how it all plays out.
Well, we'll be following it as it does play out, obviously, Brad, and you'll be a part of those conversations, no doubt, in the future. Let's move on and talk about that last item that we had to discuss today, which has to do with that bill that is expected to be signed into law by Governor Inslee related to felon voting rights. The old way of doing business, I suppose, as far as that's concerned, Brad, it looks like it's going to go by the wayside. So those who have been convicted of felonies here in Washington State, even if they're still on parole, could still have their voting rights reinstated based on this. You said you voted against this proposal. So tell us a little bit more about what we may have heard about it outside of just the headlines or some of the news drafts that we've had here, and also about why you were opposed to this.
Yeah, so this is House Bill 1078. It was debated hotly in the House. It was passed the House by a vote of 57 to 41 and passed the Senate by a vote of 27 to 22. So it was a pretty close situation over here in the Senate. But basically, Washington State has strict laws related to restoring felony voting rights. So when a person is convicted of a crime, and sometimes these are very violent, heinous crimes like rape, sexual assault, and murders, basically people do not get their voting rights restored until they've satisfied their full debt to society, which includes sometimes their parole obligations or restitution to the victims. And the bill that was passed by the House and that passed the Senate would restore voting rights to felons once they're out of jail, which might seem reasonable, but again, their full sentence would include not only their incarceration in confinement, but also potentially parole and restitution to the victims and other obligations of their sentence. And so I think some of these crimes are very violent, and I think it is appropriate to pull back people's voting rights when they commit these violent felonies. And I don't believe they should be restored until people have fully satisfied their full debt to society, which includes not only their time in confinement, but also satisfactorily fulfilling their parole as well as other restitution and other obligations of their sentence. So I didn't support it, but it was hotly debated, and I guess good people can disagree, and the bill is likely to be signed by the governor soon.
Brad, kind of a slippery slope for certainly someone in your position and even a radio show host like myself, basically for everybody right now, but I'm going to refuse to walk on as many eggshells as a lot of people are, I guess, with relation to the issues that we're facing as far as race relations are concerned in this country, because again, the supporters of this bill that you're talking about, I mean, essentially what you just stated makes perfect sense and would seem to make perfect sense outside of any year, maybe except this one. And the supporters of this particular piece of legislation felt like it was necessary because of the disproportionate amounts of those who are of a different ethnic persuasion who are in jail, incarcerated for these crimes, and therefore lose their voting rights. So again, this goes to the point of racial fairness and equity. Mm-hmm. However, it seems as though in the process and the scramble of trying to equalize everything, that we're forsaking an awful lot potentially of, dare I say, common sense when it comes to some of these things. I know police reform has been a major issue this year as well on the docket for both the Senate and the House, and not just here in Washington, all across the country. And, you know, I think we all obviously want what's best. Most of us do. I really do truly believe that most people are not racist. They want to see equity in their world. They want a fair and just world for themselves and for others. So, I don't know. My question for you, I guess, would be about this legislation and perhaps as it pertains to others that you've seen, and being as little controversial as possible here, you know, do you feel like that might be the case? Like there may be some knee-jerk reactions going on at the governmental level right now, and we're going to wind up going back and like figuring out eventually that, hey, some of these moves we made that were supposed to be for the better in the common interest in as far as racial equity is concerned really weren't in the best interest of the people in general, regardless of their race.
Yeah, and we do have to be very thoughtful about that. I think what often happens with politicians, and I guess I have to include myself in that category, although I like to think of myself as a public servant rather than a politician, but they try to react, and they capture headlines with certain proposals. And sometimes, you know, if you play up to, you have to be balanced and thoughtful with the policy proposals and not necessarily sponsor legislation for any one particular segment of society, because then you might end up with an outcome that doesn't benefit the greater good. And so I always look for the greatest good for the greatest number, but it is very important that we be equitable and we be thoughtful about the challenges that we face in our country, especially with race relations. But, you know, when it came to this felony voter right issue, for example, I could understand the people's arguments about, you know, we're trying to reduce recidivism. We're trying to give people hope, you know, when they come out. We're helping people reintegrate into society. And a great way to do that is to give people an opportunity to connect with their community and to vote. So in that sense, it does make sense, especially for the disproportionate impacts on communities of color, like you mentioned. But we have to be careful. You know, there's a bill coming before the Senate that's already been approved by a House of Representatives on police tactics. And I've been in close communications just this week with Sheriff Brian Burnett and Chief Crown from Wenatchee Police Department about this, because one of the provisions in the bill would prohibit and outlaw the use of certain SWAT team armored vehicles. And we have not only a lot invested into those vehicles in Chelan County and City of Wenatchee, but they are of great benefit to us when we need it. They help protect the people who are on the front lines trying to protect us. And so fortunately, it looks like I worked with another colleague from Snohomish County area, and we're able to get an amendment to permit the use of these vehicles that we've already invested a lot in our community. But it's things like that, you know, it's all the details of these different proposals too. I mean, sometimes the overall thought and idea is well-intended, but then when you get into all the specificities and how the legislation is written, it could have a lot of unintended consequences too. So I just think, you know, it's a great question. I think we need to be really thoughtful about all the legislation we pass, and hopefully it doesn't disadvantage or significantly advantage any one particular segment of society.
Well, again, it's been an interesting year. Needless to say, not that all years aren't interesting in some ways, but this one, I think, has had its special intensities in certain places, so it's been magnified in a lot of ways. Brad, I appreciate the time. 12th District State Senator Brad Hawkins with us today here on the Coho Morning Show. Look forward to our next chat. Until then, stay safe, and again, we'll talk soon.
Sounds great, Chris. Always great to talk to you, and I appreciate the good conversation this morning.